This Fremen religious adaptation, then, is the source of what we now recognize as the pillars of the universe, whose Quisara Tafwid are among us all with signs and proofs and prophecy. They bring us the Arakeen mystical fusion whose profound beauty is typified by the stirring music built on the old forms, but stamped with the new awakening. Who has not heard and been deeply moved by the old man's hymn? I drove my feet through a desert whose mirage fluttered like a host. Voracious for glory, greedy for danger, I roamed the horizons of Al-Kulab, watching time level mountains in its search and its hunger for me. And I saw the sparrows swiftly approach, bolder than the onrushing wolf. They spread in the tree of my youth. I heard the flock in my branches and was caught on their beaks and claws. From Arrakis Awakening by the Princess Irulan. The man crawled across a dune top. He was a mote caught in the glare of the noon sun. He was dressed only in torn remnants of a Jubba cloak, his skin bare to the heat through the tatters. The hood had been ripped from the cloak, but the man had fashioned a turban from a torn strip of cloth. Wisps of sandy hair protruded from it, matched by a sparse beard and thick brows. Beneath the blue within blue eyes, remains of a dark stain spread down to his cheeks. A matted depression across mustache and beard showed where a stillsuit tube had marked out its path from nose to catch pockets. The man stopped half across the dune crest, arms stretched down the slipface. Blood had clotted on his back and on his arms and legs. Patches of yellow-gray sand clung to the wounds. Slowly he brought his hands under him, pushed himself to his feet, stood there swaying. And even in this almost random action there remained a trace of once precise movement. "I am Liet Kynes," he said, addressing himself to the empty horizon, and his voice was a hoarse caricature of the strength it had known. "I am His Imperial Majesty's planetologist," he whispered. "Planetary ecologist for Arrakis. I am steward of this land." He stumbled, fell sideways along the crusty surface of the windward face. His hands dug feebly into the sand. "I am steward of this sand," he thought. He realized that he was semi-delirious, that he should dig himself into the sand, find the relatively cool underlayer, and cover himself with it. But he could still smell the rank, semi-sweet esters of a pre-spice pocket somewhere beneath the sand. He knew the peril within this fact more certainly than any other Fremen. If he could smell the pre-spice mass, that meant the gases deep under the sand were nearing explosive pressure. He had to get away from here. His hands made weak, scrabbling motions along the dune face. A thought spread across his mind, clear, distinct. The real wealth of a planet is in its landscape. How we take part in that basic source of civilization. Agriculture. And he thought how strange it was that the mind, long fixed on a single track, could not get off that track. The Harkonnen troopers had left him here without water or stillsuit, thinking a worm would get him if the desert didn't. They had thought it amusing to leave him alive to die by inches at the impersonal hands of his planet. The Harkonnens always did find it difficult to kill Fremen, he thought. We don't die easily. I should be dead now. I will be dead soon. But I can't stop being an ecologist. The highest function of ecology is understanding consequences. The voice shocked him, because he recognized it and knew the owner of it was dead. It was the voice of his father, who had been planetologist here before him. His father long dead, killed in the cave-in at Plaster Basin. "Got yourself into quite a fix here, son," his father said. "You should have known the consequences of trying to help the child of that duke." "I'm delirious," Kynes thought. The voice seemed to come from his right. Kynes scraped his face through sand, turning to look in that direction. Nothing except a curving stretch of dune dancing with heat devils in the full glare of the sun. "The more life there is within a system, the more niches there are for life," his father said. And the voice came now from his left, from behind him. "Why does he keep moving around?" Kynes asked himself. "Doesn't he want me to see him?" "Life improves the capacity for the environment to sustain life," his father said. "Life makes needed nutrients more readily available. It binds more energy into the system through the tremendous chemical interplay from organism to organism." "Why does he keep harping on the same subject?" Kynes asked himself. "I knew that before I was 10. Desert hawks, carrion eaters in this land, as were most wild creatures, began to circle over him. Kynes saw a shadow pass near his hand, forced his head farther around to look upward. The birds were a blurred patch on silver-blue sky, distant flecks of soot floating above him. "We are generalists," his father said. "You can't draw neat lines around planet-wide problems. Planetology is a cut-and-fit science." "What's he trying to tell me?" Kynes wondered. "Is there some consequence I failed to see?" His cheek slumped back against the hot sand, and he smelled the burned rock odor beneath the pre-spice gases. From some corner of logic in his mind, a thought formed. "Those are carrion-eater birds over me. Perhaps some of my Fremen will see them and come to investigate." "'Tis a working planetologist. His most important tool is human beings," his father said. "You must cultivate ecological literacy among the people. That's why I've created this entirely new form of ecological notation." "He's repeating things he said to me when I was a child," Kynes thought. He began to feel cool, but that corner of logic in his mind told him, "The sun is overhead. You have no stillsuit, and you're hot. The sun is burning the moisture out of your body." His fingers clawed feebly at the sand. "They couldn't even leave me a stillsuit. The presence of moisture in the air helps prevent too rapid evaporation from living bodies," his father said. "Why does he keep repeating the obvious?" Kynes wondered. He tried to think of moisture in the air. Grass covering this dune. Open water somewhere beneath him. A long canal flowing with water open to the sky, except in text illustrations. Open water. Irrigation water. It took 5,000 cubic meters of water to irrigate 1 hectare of land per growing season, he remembered. "Our first goal on Arrakis," his father said, "is grassland provinces. We will start with these mutated poverty grasses. When we have moisture locked in grasslands, we'll move on to start upland forests, then a few open bodies of water. Small at first, and situated along lines of prevailing winds with wind-trap moisture precipitators spaced in the lines to recapture what the wind steals. We must create a true sirocco, a moist wind, but we will never get away from the necessity for wind traps." "Always lecturing me," Kynes thought. "Why doesn't he shut up? Can't he see I'm dying? You will die too, his father said, if you don't get off the bubble that's forming right now deep underneath you. It's there, and you know it. You can smell the pre-spice gases. You know the little makers are beginning to lose some of their water into the mass. The thought of that water beneath him was maddening. He imagined it now, sealed off in strata of porous rock by the leathery half-plant, half-animal little makers, and the thin rupture that was pouring a cool stream of clearest, pure, liquid, soothing water into a pre-spice mass. He inhaled, smelling the rank sweetness. The odor was much richer around him than it had been. Kynes pushed himself to his knees, heard a bird screech, the hurried flapping of wings. This is Spice Desert, he thought. There must be Fremen about, even in the day sun. Surely they can see the birds and will investigate. Movement across the landscape is a necessity for animal life, his father said. Nomad peoples follow the same necessity. Lines of movement adjust to physical needs for water, food, minerals. We must control this movement now, align it for our purposes. Shut up, old man, Kynes muttered. We must do a thing on Arrakis never before attempted for an entire planet, his father said. We must use man as a constructive ecological force, inserting adapted terraform life. A plant here, an animal there, a man in that place, to transform the water cycle, to build a new kind of landscape. Shut up, Kynes croaked. It was lines of movement that gave us the first clue to the relationship between worms and spice, his father said. A worm, Kynes thought with a surge of hope. A maker's sure to come when this bubble bursts. But I have no hooks. How can I mount a big maker without hooks? He could feel frustration sapping what little strength remained to him. Water, so near, only 100 meters or so beneath him. A worm, sure to come, but no way to trap it on the surface and use it. Kynes pitched forward onto the sand, returning to the shallow depression his movements had defined. He felt sand hot against his left cheek, but the sensation was remote. The Arrakeen environment built itself into the evolutionary pattern of native life forms, his father said. How strange that so few people ever looked up from the spice long enough to wonder at the near-ideal nitrogen-oxygen-CO2 balance being maintained here in the absence of large areas of plant cover. The energy sphere of the planet is there to see and understand. A relentless process, but a process nonetheless. There is a gap in it. Then something occupies that gap. Science is made up of so many things that appear obvious after they are explained. I knew the little maker was there, deep in the sand, long before I ever saw it. Please, stop lecturing me, father, Kynes whispered. A hawk landed on the sand near his outstretched hand. Kynes saw it fold its wings, tip its head to stare at him. He summoned the energy to croak at it. The bird hopped away 2 steps but continued to stare at him. Men and their works have been a disease on the surface of their planets before now, his father said. Nature tends to compensate for diseases, to remove or encapsulate them, to incorporate them into the system in her own way. The hawk lowered its head, stretched its wings, refolded them. It transferred its attention to his outstretched hand. Kynes found that he no longer had the strength to croak at it. The historical system of mutual pillage and extortion stops here on Arrakis, his father said. You cannot go on forever stealing what you need without regard to those who come after. The physical qualities of a planet are written into its economic and political record. We have the record in front of us, and our course is obvious. He never could stop lecturing, Kynes thought. Lecturing, lecturing, lecturing. Always lecturing. The hawk hopped one step closer to Kynes's outstretched hand, turned its head first one way and then the other to study the exposed flesh. Arrakis is a one-crop planet, his father said. One crop. It supports a ruling class that lives, as ruling classes have lived in all times, while, beneath them, a semi-human mass of semi-slaves exists on the leavings. It's the masses and the leavings that occupy our attention. These are far more valuable than has ever been suspected. I'm ignoring you, father, Kynes whispered. Go away. And he thought, surely there must be some of my Fremen near. They cannot help but see the birds over me. They will investigate, if only to see if there's moisture available. The masses of Arrakis will know that we work to make the land flow with water, his father said. Most of them, of course, will have only a semi-mystical understanding of how we intend to do this. Many, not understanding the prohibitive mass-ratio problem, may even think we'll bring water from some other planet rich in it. Let them think anything they wish, as long as they believe in us. In a minute, I'll get up and tell him what I think of him, Kynes thought. Standing there, lecturing me when he should be helping me. The bird took another hop closer to Kynes's outstretched hand. Two more hawks drifted down to the sand behind it. Religion and law among our masses must be one and the same, his father said. An act of disobedience must be a sin and require religious penalties. This will have the dual benefit of bringing both greater obedience and greater bravery. We must depend not so much on the bravery of individuals, you see, as upon the bravery of a whole population. Where is my population now when I need it most? Kynes thought. He summoned all his strength, moved his hand a finger's width toward the nearest hawk. It hopped backward among its companions, and all stood poised for flight. Our timetable will achieve the stature of a natural phenomenon, his father said. A planet's life is a vast, tightly interwoven fabric. Vegetation and animal changes will be determined at first by the raw physical forces we manipulate. As they establish themselves, though, our changes will become controlling influences in their own right, and we will have to deal with them too. Keep in mind, though, that we need control only 3% of the energy surface. Only 3% to tip the entire structure over into our self-sustaining system. Why aren't you helping me? Kynes wondered. Always the same. When I need you most, you fail me. He wanted to turn his head, to stare in the direction of his father's voice, stare the old man down. Muscles refused to answer his demand. Kynes saw the hawk move. It approached his hand, a cautious step at a time, while its companions waited in mock indifference. The hawk stopped only a hop away from his hand. A profound clarity filled Kynes's mind. He saw quite suddenly a potential for Arrakis that his father had never seen. The possibilities along that different path flooded through him. No more terrible disaster could befall your people than for them to fall into the hands of a hero, his father said. reading my mind, Kynes thought. Well, let him. The messages already have been sent to my CH villages, he thought. Nothing can stop them. If the Duke's son is alive, they'll find him and protect him as I have commanded. They may discard the woman, his mother, but they'll save the boy. The hawk took one hop that brought it within slashing distance of his hand. It tipped its head to examine the supine flesh. Abruptly, it straightened, stretched its head upward, and with a single screech, leaped into the air and banked away overhead with its companions behind it. They've come, Kynes thought. My Fremen have found me. Then he heard the sand rumbling. Every Fremen knew the sound, could distinguish it immediately from the noises of worms or other desert life. Somewhere beneath him, the pre-spice mass had accumulated enough water and organic matter from the little makers, had reached the critical stage of wild growth. A gigantic bubble of carbon dioxide was forming deep in the sand, heaving upward in an enormous blow with a dust whirlpool at its center. It would exchange what had been formed deep in the sand for whatever lay on the surface. The hawks circled overhead, screeching their frustration. They knew what was happening. Any desert creature would know. And I am a desert creature, Kynes thought. You see me, father? I am a desert creature. He felt the bubble lift him, felt it break and the dust whirlpool engulf him, dragging him down into cool darkness. For a moment, the sensation of coolness and the moisture were blessed relief. Then, as his planet killed him, it occurred to Kynes that his father and all the other scientists were wrong, that the most persistent principles of the universe were accident and error. Even the hawks could appreciate these facts.